Blog Talk Radio.
Talking about shorty? What you know about a woman's work?
Those of you who joined us last week were probably amazed, as I was, by some of the latest research in the field of UFOs. There is so much to talk about, however, we were unable to fit it all into one program, so my guest again this week is UFO researcher, former state Senate candidate, and award-winning pilot John Lear. Mr. Lear, nice to have you here again.
Always a pleasure to be here, George.
To begin with, we have this concept of the people from other planets as little green.
It's important for us to know when we're talking about women in history. We must know about the three mamas in St. Thomas, who in the 17th century liberated the islands militarily from the Dutch. And the islands stayed free for more than 9 years they run the island before British, Dutch, and German put together to put these women down. We must know these things. We must know, women liberation didn't start in 1960 when we started burning bras. Makeda in Ethiopia, in Saba, she was a woman ruler who came after 3,000 years of uninterrupted rule by women. In her country, they could not imagine that a man could rule a country. Because they felt, first of all, they hadn't seen it. They've always known a woman and ruling the country. And second, they felt With the natural talents of women for details, men did not have what it takes to run a country. That's why it was the business of woman. Yes, it's very, you know, launched.
America is essentially a dream. It is a dream of a land where men of all races, of all nationalities, and of all creeds can live together as brothers.
I wish I could live in a fantasy world where everything just makes where nothing is wrong, in the words of my song, your love is all that I ever need. When I turn to the time that my heart wasn't mine, baby, I'm lost, lost, lost in my own reality. But all you got to do is, baby, hold, hold on to me. When I'm not that free, your love is all that I need.
Detroit, this is for you, okay? Join me, if you will, on the pop. You've been such a marvelous audience. I wonder if I could impose on you just one more time. I'd like to hear everybody snap your finger, clap your hands, or something right here, you know. Those of you that were born from born here in Detroit, could I get you to say Detroit? But I want to hear you say it, okay? I'm going to count to four, and then I want to hear you. One, two, three, four. Detroit! Bring it down just a little bit more, would you? Yeah. Ah, yeah. Now, those of you that are from Detroit, oh, right on, honey. You from Detroit? Well, she's not only saying it, she's showing you. Can I get everybody right here? When I throw the mic out there, I want to hear you say Detroit, okay? Oh, no, we got to do it together. One, two, three, four. Hey, yeah. Huh. Again. One, two, three, four. Would you tear the roof off the mother this time for me? One, two, three, four.
Detroit.
Hey, uh-huh, that's what I'm talking about.
Hello everyone, welcome to Drive On Connection. This is Antoinette, and tonight we're going to be discussing with Ms. Kim Weston her story. Ms. Kim, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, but could you speak up a little bit louder, please?
Okay, now I'm on the line.
And but you're loud and clear now.
Thank you. Did you ever get that straight from your end?
Where we can hear now, yes.
Okay, because I'm on the other line.
Okay, you're on my line?
You can turn me off your line.
You want me to take you off my line?
Yes.
Okay.
Blessings,
okay, you're still with me. Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, let me turn this up.
And thank you so much for those that are with us. This wasn't supposed to be my story, Antoinette. We're supposed to be talking about Black history in the Tuskegee Airmen, I thought.
Yes. And you, of course, Ms. Kim, this is your story. So how you want to tell it is how we're going to accept it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I recorded an album that I dedicated to the American veterans. And I don't know if you have.
Which one is in this film? Pardon
me? This is America. This is America.
Yes, I do. Yes, I have that.
Can you play that for me, please?
Yes, I can. Give me 1 second. That's not the one.
No, this is America.
This is America, yes.
God Bless America was dedicated to the veterans as well. In the meantime, we're dedicating the show to Dota Fontoy, Billy Fontoy, that was on the show with us. And when we get into the show, I've got some things that I want to mention. And I'll start with 1844.
Are you ready for me to play it, Ms. Kim? Let me know when you're ready.
Yes, ma'am, I'm ready.
Okay. There you go.
This man who spoke has much to learn. A man is born that way. And this is America. A man is born to walk the land in search of truth and trust, to pass the road from hand to hand and change the things he must. Oh, this is America, this land of mine. Oh, stand behind the land of the free and the home of the brave. He's free to talk and wonder why, to say what's on his mind, to sleep beneath the quiet sky, unfettered, unconfined. Yes, this is America. A man is still a man in spite of anything he says, and for his freedom he will fight until it's here someday. Yes, this is America, this land of mine. I stand behind the land of the free and the home of the brave.
this, Kim?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, you have such a beautiful voice.
Well, to God be the glory, because what most people don't realize is we're here to be a blessing. That's how
we are. Yes.
We have other gifts, other assignments. But our purpose, we are made to be a blessing for the glory of God. That's my belief. I should say that. Mm-hmm. If people were doing that, we wouldn't have all this confusion. This play I've been working on forever. She says that if we pray, but the girl says, I don't want to pray for my enemy and then he get blessed. And the minister tells her, yeah, but if you pray for your enemy and he gets blessed, then we won't have all the confusion we have.
Yeah, and that's true. That is so true. Yes, Ms. Kim, I know that you are doing a lot of things. What are you working on now?
March 28th is commemorative day.
Yeah.
In about 5 states, we need to make it national. I want to make it international. But March is the fourth Thursday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy Fontoy was the one that started that.
Yes.
And he asked me if I would help him to make it a national holiday. Well, you know, we lost him here, physically. But he's still in our heart, so he's not gone. And that,
yes, he is.
I've been still trying to do that as much as I can. And I'm asking those that will help.
Let's go.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. Yes, I had did a couple interviews with Brother Billy, and I just had one up this week where it was the encore of the interview that we had did with Brother Billy that is deeply missed. He is truly missed.
I learned so much from him.
Yes, I did the little bit of time that, you know, I got to talk with him. He was always had a lot of information, you know, a lot of things that he wanted to, you know, bestow upon you, you know, upon me, you know, if I'm speaking of me personally, you know, just the information that he has given me. You know, Miss Kim, he sang to me one day.
I called you on your birthday, and he sung to you.
Yes, and he sung last year, right? Couldn't have been this year. It had been last year.
Yeah, it was last year.
Because my birthday just passed.
Right, it was last year.
Yeah, but he had sang to me again. I think the last time that him and I had talked, he sang to me. He just started off singing.
He had a beautiful voice.
Yes, he did.
And that's
I tell
in
you,
the
God
family.
Truly blessed that family. You know, the Fontoys, they were truly a blessed family. And a lot
and
of
all
talent with them.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me?
I see, and all the guys can sing. I met former Congressman Walter Fontoy first, and the first thing I heard was "The Impossible Dream" by him.
Oh wow! Miss Kim. Now. There's some things that I want to talk about now. At any time, You know, you tell me, Antoinette, which I know you will. You're going too far. But I want to talk about the men that you sang with. And, you know, I mean, I know you sang with Marvin Gaye. And do you want to tell the story behind Marvin Gaye?
You don't have enough time. We don't have enough time for that.
Can you summarize it? Can you do a little brief summary?
Well, I mean, what I'd like to do is, as we go along, just interject different things, you know. I recorded with Marvin. I worked with Billy Eckstein, Pip Wilson, Harry Belafonte. I recorded with Johnny Nash. For those that don't know who Johnny is, I can see clearly now. He's the one that recorded that.
Oh, but yeah, I can see clearly now. The rain is gone.
Right.
Did you sing that song with him?
No, I didn't. No, he and I did an album.
Oh, wow.
You were talking about, but I only recorded
with Marvin. I know you sang with the Beatles. You sang with the Beatles.
No, I didn't sing with
them. Oh, I thought you did. They introduced you.
The reason they introduced me, my first time in in England, I think it's Ready, Steady, Go. They asked Paul McCartney to introduce me. For some reason, he denied. I hope I get a chance to ask him why. But John, he introduced me. He asked me, and I thank him for that. But they were there at that at that show. So that was my first time in England. But
Go ahead. Go, the Nor'easters. Am I saying them correctly? The people that come over here from England.
Northern Soul.
Northern Soul. Now, for those that don't know who they are and what they represent, because you just did a show with them, a concert with them, a couple months ago. So if you, yes, and we have a caller. I believe this is my co-host, Erico 626, and I always say, I'm his co-host, really, y'all. 626?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
My nephew, Eric Ferris, he works at the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he told me there's a lady that worked there, and she used to come to Pink's, a hot dog stand in Hollywood. Were you the lady?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did go to Pink's while I lived in California.
Okay, because I worked there. My husband and I, we worked there for many, many years for Mr. Pink.
Oh, wow. Yes, he told me about you and your husband. That you were the only blacks that worked there, right?
Yeah, the only blacks. Yeah, we worked and did a lot of work. You know, she you know, helped with the Cancer Foundation, and we was a part of that. So we didn't just work at the hot dog stand, but, you know, we did a lot of help in the community. And I don't know, I don't go out there, but I don't know if Mr. Pink is still living, but he really was a beautiful person.
But it's so nice
hearing your voice, because my nephew had called me. He said, Annie, this lady, she works at the radio station, and she talked about Pink's. He said, call her, because I'm in California. He said, well, call her.
Well, you know what? What's your name again?
Rosie Hudson.
Ms. Hudson, would you tell our audience about Pink and how long it was there and the stars and things that came there? And some of the most important things, this is history right here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I was very young when I started working for Mr. Pink and his wife. And I got a chance to meet so many beautiful people, and Reverend James Cleveland became my friend. I visited him at his home many times. And Marvin Gaye. I heard that he was kin to me. I don't really know. I never got a chance to ask him, but I met so many stars. Diana Ross, she always passed by and yell, you know, "Hey, Rosie, hey, Johnny." So it was a blessing working there because he was Jewish, but he loved everybody. So it's just so nice talking with the lady that used to come to Pink's, and I'm sure back in the day she had met me, but my nephew just happened to call me because I live in West Covina, California.
Okay. Thank you so much. What I'd like for you to do is tell us something that was special for you, one of the most important things that happened there.
Well, you know what, Mr. Pink and his wife, she had the Cancer Foundation, and a lot of times you meet people that come, and they would stand around, and I guess they didn't have any money, and Mr. Pink, because, you know, he was Jewish, and he would say to me, "Hey, sweetie, give him a chili dog, give him a drink or something like that." And then we, on our days off, we would go and help with the foundation. So it's just beautiful to know that you work at a place, and it doesn't mean that the people have to be black, but these people here really gave back, and they were really wonderful folks. I live in West Covina, so I never go up there. And I really don't know if they still living, but I know the place is still there because I heard the daughter-in-law is in control of the place now. But it's just so nice talking with the lady that used to come, and I'm sure if she could see me, I was the only black lady worked there. My husband, he had started working for the Pinks years before I met him, you know, because they used to have a florist. And they just loved everybody and was really, really nice, you know, to the customers. And Mr. Pete would always call me his black Jewish daughter. And had a lot of beautiful times there. Like I said, I met so many movie stars, like Diana Ross would drive on La Brea, and she's screaming, holler out of her car, "Hey, Rosie, hey, Johnny." And then I got a chance to meet Reverend James Cleveland and start going over to his house and met many, many singers. He was really nice, you know. So it's just a blessing.
It's interesting that you say that because I work with James Cleveland, too, here. And
okay.
I used to sing with a gospel group called the Right Specials.
Okay. Yeah, he was a nice, he was really a nice man, you know. A lot of times the stars would come there and, you know, and I would wait on them, and then someone would, when they would leave, they would say, "Well, was that Diana Ross?" And then sometimes they would say, "Well, where's Mr. Pink at?" And I said, "He's next door in the shoe store," because he owned the shoe store, but he rented it out, but he had his little office in the back. And the person would say, "Well, I need to talk with Mr. Pink." And so I said, "He's next door, so I'm still working." And the lady would go over there, and she said, "You know, the black lady you have working in there, you need to fire her." And Mr. Pink would say, "Well, what did she do? What'd she do?" "Well, Diana Ross came here, and she just acted like Diana Ross wasn't nobody. She waited on her and treated her just like she treated everybody else," Mr. Pink said. And what did she do? "Did she wait on Diana Ross?" Yeah, she waited on Diana Ross. "Did she wait on you?" "Yeah, she waited on me. I just don't like her attitude." He said, "Well, you know, do me a favor, ma'am. Since you don't like her attitude, I know you're not going to like what I say. She's my black Jewish daughter, and if you're not happy with her, you don't have to come back. We don't have time for all this."
Wow, that's
and then, so anyway, and it's not because you work in a place. A lot of times you can give your time and help, you know, someone that need help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and when I go, I live in La Puente, but when I go to LA and I see my friends, you know, a lot of the singers and people like that. Marvin Gaye. Someone had told me that my family, that Marvin Gaye was kin to me. I said, Marvin Gaye kin to me? And they said, yeah. So I met him at the hot dog stand. But when I'm busy, you know, if I know you, I'll speak to you. And then, but I don't take up the time because, you know, the place is real, real busy all the time.
All the time. Yeah, it's always the line there.
Yeah, and then I found out that I have a cousin that used to come there. His name is H.B. Bonham. He was my cousin. My grandmother and his grandmother were sisters. And I was I was talking with someone, and they said, yeah, you know, H.B. is from Texas. I go, really? Say, yeah. So I met him. And then so I said, well, what part of Texas are you from? So he told me, I said, well, who is your kin people? He said, well, the Farises, and he just started naming all peoples. And I said, did you know Susie Ferris? And he said, yeah, that's my aunt. I said, well, that's my grandmother.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So I got a chance to meet. But it's so nice talking with you ladies tonight. And God bless you, because my nephew, he called me. He's at the radio station. He goes, Annie, now this lady, she used to come to Pink's all the time. She's talking about Pink's. I said, okay, I'll call her.
This is Miss Kim Wexton. Remember, Miss Kim sang with Marvin Gaye.
I probably met her. If I see her, I probably met her, because they did tell me that Marvin Gaye, but he used to come to the hot dog stand all the time, but a lot of the stars would come. And I know that they just wanted to eat, and I never said anything. I didn't just say who they was. And then one time this lady, she told Mr. Pink, she says, I need to talk to you. And he said, okay, well, what's wrong? She said, that black girl that you got working for you, you need to fire her. He said, well, what did she do? Well, you know, so-and-so came here. And she just treated them just like they were somebody out the street. He said, well, was they standing in the building or was they on the street? And he said, well, did she wait on them? Did she give them good service? Said, yeah, but I just don't like her attitude. He said, I tell you what, walk around the corner with me. And he would say, you know what, if you don't like her, you don't like her attitude, you don't have to come back again, okay? I don't have time for this. He said, that's my black Jewish daughter anyway, so. So he was really a wonderful person.
I want to mention something about our neighborhoods and how they used to be. The Jews were in our neighborhood, and there are a lot of people that had problems with them. But the Jews that were in my neighborhood, they were like what you're talking about, Mr. Crink. The people that are in the neighborhoods now are disrespectful. They don't care anything about us. They take the money out, and they give nothing back.
Well, they gave back. They gave back, and they treated people very nice. A lot of times he would come in and he'd take them. He was an older man. He'd take the money out of the drawer. And my husband, he had been working for them before when, you know, and he would tell him, he says, don't do that. You take the money out and you walk out. Somebody hits you in the head and kill you. But he wasn't afraid. Nobody ever bothered him, you know, but it's just thing, you know, and they gave back. When people had cancer, his wife got her little ladies, I call them her little rich ladies, and we raised money, and when we would get off from work, we would go and help. So it was a wonderful thing, not only to work and serve, but also to help the ones that needed help, you know.
I lived in Israel for almost 3 years. It's just like everybody. All blacks are not bad. All in no race, everybody's bad. They're good.
True.
In every race. You know?
That's true.
And that's what we need to concentrate on and help them get rid of those that ain't.
Well, if you ever come to California, you can get my number from my nephew and give me a call, and I'll come pick you up and bring you to my church, and I would love to meet you guys.
Yes, ma'am. What's your church? What's the name of your church?
St. Stephen's Baptist Church.
Okay. Where is that at?
in La Puente, Dr. McCall, he was from Louisiana. He was the first minister, and now we have a younger minister, Reverend Dockery. He's our pastor.
Before you leave, though, I wanted to tell you about your cousin, HB. Did you know that he's known worldwide?
Yes, I do. Matter of fact, somebody in my family gave me his number last Sunday, but I haven't called, you know, to see if that was the right number. But he is, you know. And he had a friend who lived in the same building that I lived in for years, and you know, I would say hi, he said hi, and never knew that he was my cousin until one day the young lady said, you know what? She said, HB is from Texas. And I go, who is HB? She said, the young guy that always come over and visit me, he's in the music business. I said, oh, okay. And so then when I met him, I told her, yeah, he comes to Hot Dog Stand too. And she said, I said, but I don't have time, you know, to have a conversation with everybody. I treat them nice and speak to them, and, you know. And so then she told him that I was from Texas. I was born in Texas. And so then she said to me, well, I'm going to ask him, you know, where was he born? And so she did. And then he told me, I'd like to talk with her. And so he asked me, he said, so who do you know in Texas? And I said, well, my family is well known in Texas, the Ferris family. And he said, Ferris? And I said, yes. He said, did you ever know Susie Ferris? I said, yeah, that's my grandmother. He said, well, then you knew my mother. And I said, what's your mother's name? And he told me, I go, oh, yeah. That's her sister. He said, so that means that we're cousins. So it's a small world.
Yes, it is. I'm going to play for you, Miss Kim and Marvin Gaye. Baby, I need your loving.
Oh.
I met Marvin Gaye, very, very nice person. Oh, I love his music.
Okay. And I'm going to play you for you. Yes,
okay.
Pardon me? Okay, here we go. Yeah.
When you see me smiling, babe, I need you, babe. Things I have gotten worse, babe. Any smile that you might see has all been rehearsed, babe.
I need you, babe.
Darling, can't go on without you.
Oh, babe.
This emptiness won't let me live without
you.
This loneliness inside me,
babe.
Okay, that was our Miss Kim and with Marvin Gaye.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And thank you for letting me talk.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thank you for being with us and for the accolades that you gave to Miss Kim. We truly appreciate it. Miss Kim, do you have anything else that you would like to say to her before she leaves?
I want to ask her, do you know about the Tuskegee Airmen, or what do you know?
No, not too much. I think I listened last week when my nephew called me, and I listened to your program for a little bit.
Okay, well, the Tuskegee Airmen were really responsible for us winning.
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, yeah, I misunderstood what you said. Yeah, I do know a little something about them, yes.
Tell us what you know.
Oh, I just know that they were in the service, and it's not a lot of history I know, but I do know a few things about them. They were some real, real great guys. They were in the service.
Yeah, they were the first black fighters that we had in the air.
Right, okay.
And they said because of them, we won World War II because of them.
Wow.
But nobody gave them any recognition.
Okay.
We didn't show any appreciation. And I'm sure it's because of where we were at the time as a people. But I feel that we should, even though most of them are gone, we still need to give them the recognition, because the other pilots, I can't think of the name of the fighters in the air, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of them doing what they were supposed to do, they were trying to shoot down the plane. And because of that, there were 900 bomber planes that were being shot down every day at least. And each one of those planes had 12 to 15 men. So you multiply that and see how many people were dying until the Tuskegee Airmen came.
Wow.
And they received no recognition. So that's why I'm working, asking people to help us with the national holiday, the fourth Thursday of every March, and there are only 5 states that's recognizing them now. We didn't give them any recognition when they were here. But we need to let our children know, because they had the integrity to say, we're going to do this regardless to what they say. We want to let them know. They said that black men were not capable of flying planes, and they showed them. And because of what they did, they integrated the armed forces.
Yeah, I have heard of them. My former pastor is a retired serviceman. He was in the service. And he was a pilot also.
Well, he probably were working with them. He might have been a Tuskegee.
He could have. Pilot. Yeah.
Is he in his 80s?
You know what? I don't really remember which branch of service he was in. because he retired, and when he come, usually came to the church, you know, he had a regular suit on. He still have a pastor, but he's retired. And my former husband, he was in the army, and but he's passed on. I had a lot of uncles and things that was born in Texas, was in the service.
Well, we're also working to put together a veteran and community coalition.
Okay.
Because most of our problems come from us not being together. We won't work together. Everybody wants to be the boss.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the boss. I want the project to be done. Like you and
right.
Mr. Pink, you want to make sure that things are done the way they're supposed to be done.
Yeah, you like me. I like to work. I don't have to be. And I don't like to be in the front. I like to be in the back and do the work.
Make sure it's done.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to bring somebody else in with y'all, okay?
Okay, well, I'm going to have to hang up anyway. And anyway, thank you for letting me talk. And I will be calling back in, okay?
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
And God bless you.
God bless you too, darling, and thank your nephew for me, will you?
Yeah, he's right there at the radio. His name is Eric Ferris. You know him?
That's him.
Yeah, that's my nephew.
Well, I'm sure he'll be calling in a minute. We're waiting for you,
then.
Eric. All right. God bless you, darling.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye.
Thank you. Miss Kim, we have another caller. Okay, they dropped. Okay, just when I was going to open that line. Okay, I see them. Here they are. Okay, area code 706.
To God be the glory, Miss Kim.
To God be the glory, darling.
How you doing tonight, sweet? And good evening, Sister Antoinette.
Hello, Brother Kwame. How are you this evening?
I'm very grateful, and, you know, it's always good to hear Ms. Kim sharing, you know, the knowledge in which she's a walking encyclopedia, so she can go from A to Z and all in between.
Yes. Yes, that's the reason why this is her story. Tonight is her story. Ms. Kim, her story.
Right.
Part
of thing that... And the part that I'm so grateful for is that this is, you know, quote unquote, what they call Black History Month. But the thing is that she has a life history, life.
Yeah.
She has our Black life history, because from the time she was born there in Black Bottom to the time that we're hearing her now, all of those years is a story.
Yes.
All of those years, be it good, bad, or indifferent, she has a story that is filled with history, and, you know, some of the great people that are no longer here that she knew and was a part of their lives, she can actually tell us about it. You know, we don't have to read it. We don't have to Google it. We can hear it straight from the heart of Ms. Kim.
Yes.
And I thank her for that.
Can.
You know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's
confusing to me, but, you know, all things work together. In 1955, the summer of 1955, in Mobile, Alabama, I got on the bus and sat down next to a white woman. Same year Roosevelt. Before her.
Wow. Oh, I just sent you, and I sent it to you too, Sister Antoinette, the Black Liberation School. They've got a video out with this 9-year-old boy getting a pilot license. 9 years old, a young Black boy flying a plane, and, you know, and Ms. Kim was saying that some of the Tuskegee Airmen up there in Detroit, I think, or some pilots that were teaching the young children. And yes. So it's that part of having to see that continuation. Here this child is 9 years old, sitting in the cockpit with the instructor flying the plane.
They let you see him? They said that
Pardon?
We couldn't fly. I said, they let
right.
you see. They said we couldn't fly.
Right.
He's nine.
See, we ain't got to wait to get our wings when we go to heaven, as they always used to put it. We can fly in the friendly skies now. And Marvin Gaye, what's that song? Flying High in the Friendly Skies. One of his songs,
mm-hmm.
he talks about flying. And, you know,
yeah.
we have done great. This country owes a debt, because this couldn't be a country if it hadn't been for us here on Turtle Island. They couldn't have made this
okay.
because they came here and stole and killed and pillaged and took. And the thing that we were and stole us, some of us came, you know. And the thing is that they couldn't have built. And like you said, all of those people in Europe would probably be saluting Hitler's flag if it hadn't have been for the Tuskegee Airmen being able to protect those bombers when they were fighting that war in World War II. And so then the part, even for them to come on, because I like the story when Brother Billy was telling us that he dropped out of high school and he came back and tried to get it when he got out of the Air Force, out of the Army, came home and tried to get a job, and they told him that he didn't have a high school diploma and they wasn't going to hire him. And he just finished flying planes for this country in World War II. You know, and that says mm-hmm. something, that they came back home and got no recognition, got treated worse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this country couldn't have had stayed afloat if it hadn't have been for them.
Yeah, wasn't that something? When he talked about how when they came home, how the white officers, they had a whole big thing for them, and the black officers, they had to separate automatically.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, the black soldiers, you know, which was really bad, and, you know, they did all that fighting and protected them while they were overseas, and for them to come home and be disrespected.
Right. And the other part, when they tell a story about the Germans that they had in prison, brought here as prisoners, and they would ride the train and sit in the white cars and had all the blacks to sit that was fighting them sitting back there in the colored section.
Yeah.
Not only that.
And how the prisoners were treated better than they were.
Right.
Yes. I'm sorry, Miss Kim.
I was going to say that they were with barbed wire around them, and the Germans walked around free.
Right.
Oh, man. Wow.
Oh, yeah, you know, and that was the part that every war that has been fought in this country, we have fought, but we fought and did not get the recognition from the fighting we did for this country. And still
yeah.
today, we're fighting.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I wanted to ask this question, Ms. Kim. And you being in the music industry, when you did at the time you did with Hitsville and Motown and then the other labels, do you feel that you could be singing the way you did with, as you see these young women now today that are quote unquote superstars? Could you put yourself out there in the way that they did?
Well, when you say in the way that they did.
The way that they do now, and the showing themselves and doing all the stuff
like
that they do to promote their music.
Well, you know what? That's one thing I can give Motown credit on. Actually, when I started singing, I was dancing like Beyonce, but I wasn't doing all that she's doing. But I was doing dancing while singing, and I was told by Mrs. Edwards that I looked like a shake dancer. And I got
like
so
a
upset.
Who?
Like a shake dancer. You know what a shake dancer is?
No.
You know better from?
Yeah, I know what a shake dancer. In today's world, that would be like a pole dancer or a stripper.
Right.
Oh my. Okay.
And what happened? I got so upset until I just stopped moving at all.
Oh.
But didn't Motown have an etiquette because they taught all the women how to wear gowns and how to perform and etiquette. They had to go to
Maxine
etiquette
Powell.
Classes.
Miss Maxine Powell was a lady. She had one of the first black modeling schools in Detroit. And as a matter of fact, I went to her before she came to Motown. And that's basically what she was doing. She was teaching, you know, the young ladies how to deal with the world of etiquette. How to shit, how to get into a car the proper way. And most people aren't aware that there's a way that you're supposed to shit with your legs.
Yeah.
You know, how you're supposed to get out of a car, how you get into a car. Actually, it's supposed to be making it easier for you and looking the best.
Yeah.
Maxine Powell. As a matter of fact, I took Miss Powell with me to England that first trip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go into all of that, but it's history. And it's
I have a question for you, Miss Kim. I'm sure a lot of people don't know that you sang at President Bush's inauguration. Could you tell me, what was it like to be asked to sing at any president's inauguration? How did you take that?
Well, of course it was an honor.
Yeah.
It was an honor to sing before the most powerful man in the world. And that's what most people don't realize. Regardless to whether he's a Republican or a Democrat, he's still the president of the United States. And that's what's missing now. Whoever's the president, he's the president of all of us. Whether we like him or not. But that's what I'm talking about with the community coalition. What we don't like, if we come together, we can do something about it. But one person standing up, it don't mean nothing.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But now, the way how, you know, back in the 60s when Dr. King was living and Medgar Evers and Malcolm X, it seemed when they protested, they put their heart and soul in it. And nowadays, the protests, and it's a lot of people, but it still feels like something's missing. Do you see that, where something is missing?
Absolutely positive. It ain't real. And it ain't dealing with the facts, with the things that we really need to be dealing with. Mm.
Brother Kwame, do you have anything that you wanted to add to that?
Well, and yeah, because the thing that the protest, that, you know, the BLM, and the part of that was it was a movement. I mean, we had people that were lynched, and we had protests that we were fighting for rights for all people. But they looked at, you know, the lives that were taken. Thing is that all lives matter. We had values in that. We wanted rights for all people, not just the protesting that a policeman killed a black man. They've been killing us since we got here. The part of it is we had a way in which we were looking at how can we make it better for all of us, not just you know, running at a policeman, killing them. The part is that they needed to look at how do we get laws changed and make them accountable. And the thing that was really the part was that you had hundreds of people coming together, thousands that went to the March on Washington, and they were protesting to get jobs. And then he was looking at how are we going to get together to get something for all of us. And they didn't tear up and burn down the streets and do all of that. Yeah, when they assassinated, the anger came out when they killed Martin and then the thing that they rioted and did. But then the thing is that you burned up where you live at. Why you still haven't got enough courage to go over there? The people that did this to you, why don't you go burn up in their neighborhood? You won't do that because you have been trained not to touch them.
Design.
You've
by
been
design.
Trained, right, by design in your mind. You do not go and burn up white folks' stuff.
Well, that is true.
And so this is the part that we having to look at. Yeah, we got these young radical groups and talking this, but they're not going over, you know, unless they go on and pillage, go and bust windows in on Michigan Avenue in Chicago and rap, you know, some designer store. But you're not going over into their communities and burning up their grocery stores and burning up their lifestyle over there. You burn up everything in your neighborhood, and which basically, in today's way we look at our neighborhood, it ain't owned by them, no way. These are Arabs and Koreans and foreigners that come into our communities and open up stores. We won't even open up our own stores. See, that's the part we have to look at. If we had all of these stores in our community were owned by us, we wouldn't want to tear up and burn up.
Yes, you're absolutely right. We have a couple of callers with their hands up, y'all. I'm going to bring them in if y'all don't mind.
Go ahead.
Okay. Area code 262. Wait a minute. Okay. Area code 262.
Greetings. Family, how you doing, Sister Antoinette? How you doing, my goddess, Miss Kim? And how you doing, Brother Kwame? How's everybody doing this evening?
Black.
Grateful, Brother Eddie.
Yes. I just wanted to add to the mix what we were talking about, dealing with that time in the 60s as they've changed it now and they want to use Black Lives Matter, you know, the nonsense there. What the real premise was is that people lives matter. That means all people. So once you see the value in the people, then we know how to treat another person like you want to be treated. So again, it's the people, the true people, who are fighting for that righteous cause. People's lives matter. And that's basically all I wanted to add it right now to the class. And it's been a beautiful story that you're telling, Ms. Kim, given the information of your journey and you still being here to share that with us. It is greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
And we love you.
Yeah, you got me. And what you, like you're saying, the song says, lift every voice. You don't say lift every black voice.
That's correct. That is correct.
Yeah.
And the strongest voice is the people's voice. It's the people who have to lift their voice, who have to speak up and speak out.
But it can't be just one voice.
Oh, no. That's why people are plural. And the people collectively are the church. The people are the church. So it's the church. Let the church say amen, people, because we are the church.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Brother Eddie, if I may on that comment, I think the problem we're having now is because the church has not been doing what it's supposed to do. It's going somewhere else.
Yes.
That is so true.
That I was told in the beginning.
And that's why those who were part of the true foundations of those buildings called the church back then, when the pastors and the building called the church ain't doing the job, the people are always supposed to do what the pastor ain't doing. See, we are the voice. We, the people, lift the voice. The people give the real information. We tell one another what's happening. This is the fellowship that the people engage in, and we're supposed to come together and keep that moving, regardless if the pastor or that building that we happen to go to is not doing what they're doing. The people who are the true church are supposed to continue that. We don't supposed to let nothing stop us.
And that's the church, is the people. The building is where we fellowship in. Because you can have church in a tent. You know, they got churches in tents. They had churches in the woods before they built the building. Because the thing of it is, this earth is the church, because it's the people and their belief in the God that they understand together as one mind and heart, to be able to come together to do what it is, to build a building for them all to have shelter in when they worship. That's all that building is. It's in the heart. The church is in the heart of the people.
That's it. And that's why that church that comes straight from the universe, the straight in the air, is within all the people. And this is why that church never closes. See, it doesn't have a day that opens and closes on Sunday through Saturday. No. The church, the air we breathe, is the actual church. That oxygen that gives us all we need from the beginning to the end. Because ain't that what happened from the beginning, that first breath, and at the end, the last breath? So that's us. In the midst of that, that's the people giving the word in between that breath, that beginning and that end. And that's what we got to do, keep on pushing and doing what we're supposed to do and lift not just the voice, but lift the people up. This is what we do.
And that's one good part. Go ahead, Sister Antoinette.
I'm sorry. We have another caller with their hand up. I'm going to bring them in. Brother Eddie, I have to step away for a minute and get some 7-Up. Could you take over for a couple minutes, please?
Sure. You let the person in, and we'll continue until you come back.
Okay, thank you very much. Excuse me, y'all. Okay, I'm sorry, area code 310. Area code 310, if you have yourself on mute.
Yes, I do. I'm off of mute now. Thank you, Sister Antoinette. I want to say... hello, Sister Kim Weston. It's a pleasure hearing your voice and being able to share airspace with you, listening to some of your music, and seeing her story is divine. Thank you.
God be the glory.
Say it again.
To God be the glory at it.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, thank you. Thank us. Brother Kwame, you know, always love, always. Thank you for being on it with me and sharing the information to be able to pull up. And my beloved Brother Eddie with the numbers. We are back again. Yes, sir. I just wanted to share some space, you know, on the topic of, you know, lifting our voices and this idea and this concept of the church, and also you know, what you were mentioning, Sister Kim, about the marching and, like, how, as, you know, specifically Black people, how we came together. And, you know, it's really interesting seeing the dynamics of things now. And, you know, it's like as things evolved, it's like, you know, people relatively, I'll say, in some aspects, you know, quote unquote, you know, got better in some, but failed to integrate and keep remembering themselves of from which they actually originally came from. And it's like you see the substance that is lacking in that. And I really believe that it is directly linked to us just not really knowing who we are. And, I mean, we can really talk about, like, so many different things. You know, like, I was born in 1981. So I remember, you know, there was this shift of the influx of, and I grew up in L.A., South Central L.A. specifically. And you know how, like, you know, we had that influx of drugs, specifically crack, and these different things that came in that really riddled our families and our homes and our communities. And, you know, it's interesting because you did see the church at one point be this connector of history, connector of people, connector of communities. And I do believe, like, I think it was Sister, I don't know if it was you, Sister Kim or Sister Antoinette, that was like they just did something else. And I do think that they did something else. I think that something else that they did was just move as a business. And, you know, everyone, you know, in that realm had, you know, bad intentions. But I also feel like there was a lot of people that came up that really didn't know their history and they didn't even know who they were. And they were teaching and preaching a gospel that really wasn't activating and connecting the people anymore because it really wasn't rooted and grounded in the reflection of truth and light. And you can only go so far with things that are synthetic spinoffs until you are really desiring the real thing. It's interesting seeing these ripples and these waves because when I think about, like, my place and who I am in my 40s, it's, you know, I talk to my partner, Robert, about this often, and we talk about how, like, it feels like we're in, like, in-between worlds where, you know, we did grow up in a time being connected to our elders, and then we also do understand, you know, the younger generations that come under us. And what we understand is that, you know, our generation has to really take seriously this aspect of healing and really knowing ourselves. Because to thy own self be true. But how can you do that when you don't even know who you are and where you come from? And, like, that's one of the reasons why I really hold dear and cherish, you know, my newly found relationship with Brother Kwame, because he's been really such a source in, like, getting my mind going about how to or what to, what am I actually looking at and what are the questions that I'm asking and what are the things that
right
actually
on,
connect. Yes.
I'm agreeing with you because I'm 84 years old and he does the same thing for me.
Yes, and it's like I'm realizing, like, the greatest part of my work is really making time to learn how to sit in stillness and connect with my elders and get these downloads, because it's crazy how our people and your generation and the generations before have literally built this turtle island that we don't even know about, and our kids don't even know about, and the ones coming under us have no idea. But they have all this power, and they have all this, like, you know, they have power, and they have these voices, but it's not connected. It's like I'm trying to remember. I think there was like this show I was watching. I want to say with this one gentleman named Dr. Greg Braden. And he was talking about when he was sitting with some of his Native American people, they had shown him some images of a prophecy about basically the state of humanity, of where we would be right now, which he was showing in these images of people and humans literally not connected to their bodies, like separated. And, you know, the thing that really connects us and brings us together is the truth and the light. And it's just real dark and dim around here because people don't know who they are and they're not taking the time to pull up in spaces like this and to connect.
The word is, baby, my people perish with the lack of knowledge.
Like exactly, Sister Kim. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I am aware of the privilege, you know, and for me it's like, I really appreciate these spaces because, you know, my parents, when they had me, it was later on in their life. And right now, it's interesting because whenever my children decide to have kids, then that makes me and my family then the new grandmother. You know, my mom has transitioned. My father has transitioned. And now my grandparents have transitioned. And I'm only 43, you know. But I know that God doesn't do anything that isn't for a reason or a purpose. And I know there is something that is being, you know, done in and through me. And I just be
all
patient
things,
and I put.
If I may, baby, it's just all things,
yes,
work together for the good of those who love the Lord.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So I just keep.
To go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. No, yes, please. At any point, you know, I'm just here following the breadcrumbs and being obedient because obedience is better than a sacrifice. I've come to really respect that and hold that dear. And I'll just share this last part. You know, in 2021, my husband of 20 years passed of COVID. So it's interesting because,
oh,
like, dang, thank you. Thank you.
Yes,
you know, thank you. And I will say this, just know though, like my spirit is so encouraged and so focused,
yes,
and fixed, you know, actually,
yes,
what's funny, it's funny because the last couple of days I actually been sitting with that scripture in Hebrews that talks about like running your race, but like look into the cloud of great witness that has come before you. And it hit me like,
mm-hmm,
your ancestors are residing in the clouds, young lady. That's why you keep it fixed. And, you know, I really feel very blessed because in all the ways that I would want to maybe, like, feel away or complain about my situation, I'm really, like, connected in this web that is very beautiful and supportive beyond belief. So I'm getting ready to digress.
Before you go, I want to say this.
Yes.
Here. You are truly blessed, darling, because people – but while you've been talking, God has been showing me how, when you're talking about your elders, right now, you're a grandmother, right?
Not yet.
But you will be the grandmother, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You'll be the matriarch at 40.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? And that's a part of the problem because my grandmother died today, 24 years ago. She was 100 years old. She'd be 124 today, okay?
Wow.
February the 15th. But when she died, she was 100.
Hmm.
The grandmothers today, how old are they? They're 40. They're 50. So they can't pass on what the elders passed on to us because they don't have that.
That's right.
They don't have the experience. They haven't gone through those things. So they can't give it. And that's something that I think my generation and behind me don't realize. You can't give what you don't have.
That's right.
That's saying you're blessed, darling, because I heard you say that. Your parents were older when you were born, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that what you said? Okay. Well, you were blessed right there because what they had, they could give that to you. But the young people are having children at a young age. They don't know anything. Their parents don't know anything, and their parents don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
where the church. That's where the church used to serve. That's where the church
mm-hmm.
used not to be. You know, that was the only place that we could congregate in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm straying away, and I'm gonna let you say what you.
No, you got it. You got it. You got it, Sister Kim.
But could I? Could I add to what Ms. Kim is sharing, and I thank you, my sister, for showing up and growing up with us, because we're all growing up, you know, we're all students,
mm-hmm.
and Ms. Kim said we our people perish for the lack of knowledge, but
mm-hmm.
the thing is that knowledge comes with and being able to be alive for so long. You have, you know, just because you're old, you're not an elder, but it's the part of being old enough to remember how you got to be that age is the
mm-hmm.
knowledge. And the
mm-hmm.
people are perishing because the people don't get to be that age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like you said, like she said, my mom just died last year, 91 years old. I seen her sit with my cousins, my sisters. And we've heard the story that my great-grandmother's mother was born in 1854 in slavery. And as a little girl, she sat and listened to her tell her story. A living
mm-hmm.
witness of someone who talked to a person who was in captivity in this country, in Mississippi, to be able to hear that. And then Ms. Kim goes and shares is that she was her mother was 100. We don't have many centurions living today. We're dying off before we get even 50.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing is that this is why when I see young people and they have a hunger, point them in the direction of those that have lived it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that
mm-hmm.
way you get a oral story, not a history.
Mm-hmm.
Read not a history book, you get an oral story
mm-hmm.
of those
mm-hmm.
ones who have lived their history. Because like I started off with Ms. Kim. Ms. Kim is a set of encyclopedias. She can tell you from A to Z how she came to be. Ms. Kim Weston.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so it's honoring that. We heard Billy Fauntleroy. We've had
mm-hmm.
those great elders that they came and spoke with us.
Yeah.
The Ray Fauntleroy.
Yeah,
how many people know somebody who was Dr. King's chauffeur?
Mm-hmm.
That drove him around and lived and talked with the man. So these are the ways in which we exchange our knowledge. And then the church was always a place of fellowshipping, but sharing the human relationship of our people.
Yep.
It wasn't just about worshiping. It was about making sure you live.
Mm-hmm.
But it was where you were supposed to get the truth.
Pardon me, Ms. Kim?
I said that is where the truth is supposed to be. Seek the
mm-hmm.
truth and the
yes.
truth to make you free. That's where you're supposed to get
yes.
it.
Yes. That directly is definitely true. Yes, it is. But unfortunately, just like everything else, you got to find the right one.
Well, and the thing that I understand, the Creator makes no mistakes, because like I said last
mm-hmm.
night when I asked them to come on, and she came, and because she's seeking. And when you find young people that are seeking and looking for it, plant a seed. That's all you
yes.
have to do, because you plant the seed, the Creator will make it grow for them to know. The
mm-hmm.
plant the seed, the Creator will make it grow so they will know.
Brother Kwame,
yes.
when she came on, she said one of the things that I see all the time, to thine own self be true.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what do I say when you talk to Ms. Kim? First thing you say, to God be the glory, because that's her glory. She knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And Brother Kwame, can I add a little change to what you said when you said since we first came over here, they've been destroying us. I like to rephrase that and say since they came over here, because we were already here. A
mm-hmm.
lot of us
mm-hmm.
were already here. So it was when
yeah.
they got here, they started creating a havoc. And they're still doing it today.
Yes.
Thank you,
yes,
Brother Andy, because that is true. And that's what she was saying about Greg Brayton. Greg Brayton is going to the indigenous elders seeking
mm-hmm.
the spiritual knowledge of the people that whose land that they've stolen. Because
mm-hmm.
they know these ones that were here when you got here. We're not immigrants. We were, and the claiming of, I tell people that, well, who are you? I'm a cosmic citizen, but I'm also identified as an indigenous Turtle Islander, because I'm an indigenous person that was born here on Turtle Island. Y'all want to call it America, that's what they named it when they got here, but it already had a name before you got here.
Yes, sir.
Brother Kwame.
That's why I always say it was called Turtle Island. The numbers remain the same. They changed the name to United States. United States come to Turtle Island. So, again, they're not changing the number. They're changing the word, the name. The number stays the same.
You will ask a question, Ms. Kim?
Yep, but I forgot it.
Forgive me,
like
Ms. Kim. I meant for you to forget the question. I'm sorry.
You know, I used to tell my mother.
It'll come back.
Yeah, but that's what I used to tell my mother. She was saying, I just can't remember. I said, Mama, you got 91 file cabinets in your head. You don't know which drawer you put it in.
That's absolutely right.
It's interesting because to that point, you know, I'm a student of the brain. I love the brain. I study it. And when you said file cabinet, I thought about the hippocampus, because, you know, that's where we are. That's where we file it. One of the places allegedly known of in our brain that we file it. But I know that we don't even know a quarter. And whatever we do know, some of it, you just have to let it be on download. Some information about the power and our technology of who we are is just too dangerous for for that to just be massly accessed, especially with technology being the way that it is. But it's interesting when you think about it from a brain-based place because, you know, one of the reasons why, like, healing is so important, and I know when you think about the church and the dynamics of church, specifically when you get to the part of the altar calls and prayer, you know, that's that, like, when done correctly, that's that place where you get to allow the brain to shift out of the amygdala, which is that part of the brain that triggers your fight or flight syndrome. And instead, you get to activate the hippocampus, which is this retrieval and storage place in the brain where you can do just that, like a file cabinet, go and pull out what you know, not what you think, not what you believe, but what you know. But our matrix is doing an excellent job, a.k.a. our society, with keeping us so triggered and tender and inflamed by the stuff that we watch and the things that we eat and what we listen to. We're so afraid, and we've got so much fear and so much worry, and people aren't actually reenacting their own versions of an altar call. They're not reenacting their own versions of their own prayer and worship time. So where do you go with all this energy? How are you transmuting this? How are you shifting this? You know, the Bible said, you know, in the Bible, Jesus says, take upon my yoke, for my yoke is light. People are walking around with things that they don't even need because they don't even understand the power and overstand the power that they have within them to transmute all of this instead of having their energy harvested. Literally, we're going around like battery cells for another purpose that we actually did not ever sign up for in our sovereignty. So, I really appreciate this. Go ahead, Brother.
And it's so on point because what I was looking at first, I was looking at the Air Force and what the 21st century, how they're using microwave to tap into the human brain and being able to transmit and tap into you, make you perceive something that's not part of what you are. But what I was really studying was the neuromelanin synapses of development of our brain, because the part I'm sitting here reading this piece is called The Development of the Epidermal Pigmentation in the Negro Fetus. Is that the whole thing is the jewel of the melanin. And that part of that energy that comes from when we develop in the womb, this is what we're given in the womb. This is the creator's the genius. And
now,
that
Brother Kwame,
the development. Yes.
Excuse me. All that is fantastic, and I really appreciate it. But tonight is about Miss Kim's story.
I apologize, Sister Antoinette, but what I'm talking about is these are the tools that was gifted to her when she grew, and all of this part of her development with the melanin pigments. This is part of our story, how we developed. We have to go deep into the part of knowing who we are and how God put all this together from the womb to the tomb. But what we're looking at is understanding how the mind works, because the part of it is when the sister was sharing, the parts of the brain that work interaction. Is that's how we know ourselves. And Miss Kim is a divine part of this, because we understand all this in the file cabinets that's in her brain, we're hearing.
Yeah.
All this in those file cabinets is in her brain that we're hearing. She's here and able to repeat all of that which she lived is from what developed from this fetus. She was a Negro fetus.
Yeah.
Brother Kwame.
Yeah.
Yes, I want to say this. What you're saying right now is a part of what I've been searching for, trying to understand. When you're talking, what you all were talking about, I guess I've talked with Antoinette about this more than anybody, but the energy that's natural in us. There's a positive, there's a negative. And if we don't trigger or design which way that energy is going, it's going to the negative. Because there's no structure. That's why we've got to seek the truth. And as your sister said, we got to go within ourselves. That's what we've been talking about. That's what Valley of the Dry Bones connection is, for us to seek the truth so that we can reconnect. Can these bones live again? Yes, they can. That's why he's saying. Now, where do we find the truth?
Pardon me, Ms. Kim?
The truth is within us and each of us. That's why the word truth is the only vowel in the word truth is you. And it's in you. That's why the word has the only vowel in the word truth is you. And when we understand that we are truth and we're sharing it because we've learned to trust which is us in the middle of that, is because we're united in spirit. We're all one spirit. We're all from one source. We're from the divine source. We, some call God, some call Yahweh, some call other Allah, but the divine source, the universal creator of all that is who we are.
True.
I like that. The only you. I'm sorry, Ms. Kim.
You know, I was saying, I keep, so much is happening until I'm not retaining anything. I said, let me get me a pen because I'm going to write down what's happening.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Go ahead, please.
I will. Excuse me, Ms. Kim, we have 15 minutes left in this live broadcast. Are you able to go over with us or? Do you want to conclude?
Yes, ma'am. I'm
able. Go over.
To God be
okay,
the
yeah, we have, okay, 17 minutes, forgive me. We have 17 minutes left in this live broadcast. In order for you to continue to listen to the show, or, you know, if you have a question or a comment, you have to call in. And Brother Eddie, you still with me?
You know I am. I'm sitting back. I already got my pen and paper. You know I keep mine. I write everything down. So, yes. And the call-in number is 515-605-9343.
Thank
you. 515-605-9343 for you to call in and to be part of the continuation of the Overtime Show family.
Yes. And Brother Eddie, you want to give your contact information? And
no, I don't have to. This is Ms. Kim's night. Nobody need to contact me. They contact me on our show, so I'm not worried about it. I let Ms. Kim do her thing, and I'm taking notes. Like I said, hey, this is our elder queen, you know, that has a lot to share, you know. And again, as she constantly said, God be the glory. And I tell everybody that 4 and 5, God is 13, which is 4. That's the truth that we seek. Truth is 31, which is 4. So the truth is coming from God. See, that's spiritual. Spiritual is 4. It's 40, which is that 4. See, and that's the secret. It's not a secret, but they've always said it's a secret. Secret is 31. The truth ain't no secret, see?
No,
but when
not.
We see, for me, to be able to give the number of God behind the word to let us know that that's our true protection. Protection is 4. That's why God is 4, see? So everything we're saying, the spirit of God, the children of God, it's the same number.
Yeah.
And once we start to see this, for me, that's just my assignment. Assignment, that's why it ain't a job for me. It's an assignment. Assignment is 40. That's part of what God has given me, to see my assignment and to share this assignment so that we can see our own part. Everybody has a part. Mine just happens to be the numbers, and I love it so well. I love it. And I hope that it's expressed through what I give to the people, because give is 22, which is 4. That's why we giving away God. It's better to give than receive. We giving this away.
Yes, it is.
See, because it's already there.
Yes.
You know, Brother Eddie, what most people don't understand, you can't give what you ain't got.
That's the key. That's just like teaching anything. If you you can't teach what you don't know.
Yep.
And this is what it is. This is why you have to whatever you giving anybody, you got to be real with what it is you're doing. You got to be able to walk that walk you talk, see? And people can see through the lies that people try to convey because they can articulate or they can use flowery words to sound all good, but people feel the word that comes straight from your heart. If it ain't pure, then you know, we know to leave it alone, leave you alone, you know. And again, we pray for those who are worthy of our prayers. So again, Ms. Kim, you are definitely worthy of not just our prayers, our love and our thoughts. So
yeah.
keep on doing what you're doing. Keep on doing it.
Yeah. Hey, Brother Eddie.
Yes.
You know, we need a queen for our show. I suggest that we have Ms. Kim as our queen for our show.
Well, she already is. Look, I can't speak for everybody else, but she's our number one goddess, you know.
Yes,
as far
she
as
is.
This class, our classes we have, you know,
exactly.
Because, too, she's the elder, too. She's the matriarch.
Yes.
To all
Amen.
Of us on these lines
yes.
for our show. So, yes, she's already got that.
Yep. All right, well. we love you, Miss Kim.
I love you all, too.
Do. We love you.
You all have no idea how much I have learned since I've been with you. I mean, this is a blessed show. This is a blessed show, and God's showing me some things. The Valley of the Dry Bones Connection. Bless you and Dry Bones and everybody. I mean, it's amazing where we reach. And we're being listened to, so we got to make sure what we're saying. It says, let not your good be spoken bad. I'm not quoting it right. But don't let the good that you're doing, don't let them be able to say something bad about your good.
Yeah.
We can't control what people say, but if we do it the right way, ain't nothing they can say. Let not your good be evil spoken of, you know. But if we tell the truth, what they gonna say?
That is true. Miss Kim, before this clicks over, before we go into overtime, could you please tell everyone your Cash App? So, you know, anyone, if you want to send Miss Kim a love gift, a love offering.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Songbird Legend, one word, @gmail.com.
Okay, but now for your Cash App. For your Cash App, how does that go, Ms. Kim?
No, that's
not okay.
Email. Songbird Legend, that's what it is.
Okay, dollar sign first, Songbird Legend.
Mm-hmm. One.
Okay.
At the
one
end.
Word.
No. Dollar sign, Songbird Legend, one.
Okay, y'all, we want to send Miss Kim a love offering, you know, just to show her that we appreciate her and that we love her. Miss Kim,
yeah.
The educational differences. Now, how was it when you were coming up as, you know, a little girl on up? How was the education then, you know?
Let me tell you.
And I'm not poking fun, but was it the wooden floor? One?
No, ma'am.
You know,
no.
Okay.
No, ma'am. Well, there were some schools like that, but I'm in Detroit, Michigan, okay?
Okay.
See, and Detroit, Michigan is a blessed state, and Detroit is a very special place, very special place. And when I came back here from Israel, I did not recognize anything or anybody because it's not the Detroit that I know. The Detroit that I know is in that song that I wrote that song for Mary Young.
Yeah.
I went to Mary Young to ask him for a job.
Mm-hmm.
Not to ask for a job. I wanted him to implement my youth program. And he said he looked like he needed a job. And what had happened was I was working on the radio at WCHB. And I won't go into the whole story, but we're talking about history. Mary Young's cousin, Dr. Claude Young, was president of SGLC here in Detroit. And he had a pact with Wrigley's, I think it was, Wrigley's Supermarket, where they would spend X amount of dollars in the black community. He called me to his house. He gave me that, gave me those papers. And he said, the last thing he said, Jim, make sure you get some money. I took the paper to the radio station that I was working at. They worked up a $70,000 contract with Wrigley. And they gave me $100. And when he gave me that check, when I finished my shift, I walked off. I packed up my stuff and walked off the station. And I never went back. And so I was going to Mayor Young to talk to him about my youth program that I wanted to implement. And I walked off my job. He said, it looked like you need a job to me. But during that discussion, he said he wanted a new song for Detroit. That's when I wrote Detroit, and that's when he gave me Festival. You know, I'm putting all this together because I want the people that are there, that are here now, that won't be with us. But I'm scared all that, and I got where I was going.
Well, Ms. Kim, you know, was one thing that I can truly say for you is that we hear a lot about entertainers, people with money, you know, just different people that always hollering that they're doing something for the community, they're doing something for the children, or they're collecting to do something for them. You know, they're collecting money for this, they're collecting money for that. But you actually did it. You know, I mean, and your record shows where you did it, and the fruit of your labor that you put into your participants is still is manifesting still today from the different artists, and then the ones like Al McKenzie that even though he passed, it's still other ones that followed him and he followed you, you know, so it was a gift that you gave that is still given. It still keeps on giving. That love that you have for music and for performing the art that's still spreading today.
And you know what, Antoinette? I thank God
yes,
that he let me know, to let them know where their gift came from.
Yes.
Which is much different from a lot of the stuff. Like asking me about how they're portraying themselves. Probably one of the best things. But if everybody gave everybody respect, what do you think would happen? Regardless to who you are, respect. That's you don't have to love me, even though that's what God said.
Yes.
I've got a show where I'm speaking of, God didn't say nothing about that. I don't have to like you, but I got to love you. And
yeah. What's all said,
Go ahead.
No, I was saying, you know, me and Miss Kim got a saying that we tell each other, I love you, and ain't nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing, you know. And it's my job, because it's my job to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm not supposed to do what you're supposed to do. I'm supposed to do what I'm supposed to do. And my first thing is to seek the truth. There was something that I wanted to say earlier. We spoke about. You're talking about the melon that's developed and all of that. And the deception that has been portrayed on us. We still ain't got through it. It's the brown. Stick around.
Yeah, it's just
black.
Yes.
White, you're all right.
Yeah.
But now, what were you saying about the womb and what's developed in the womb, Brother Kwame?
No, I was reading that they were showing how at 3 months they looked at fetuses and saw that the fetus already had melanin and was developing in the child in the womb. These are, you know, scientific documentation that there's, it begins in the womb that you develop your skin as we as they were talking about Negroes, but we as a people, we develop that in the womb, and it's part of the Creator's gift because no powerful of cells.
No, see, I've never heard that before.
Right.
That's why they're trying to get it.
And we have what they call neuromelanin. Brain synapse, brain cells, that this is because, see, melanin is a receptor of light, and this is the part of we're a part of the Creator's light, and being able to receive that energy from the light, and we have that in the conception. So it's understanding how we develop as human beings. You know, some have more, as they say, melanemic. Some have more melanin than others. But in the part of the lana negra, is, you ever, when you were pregnant, Sister Antoinette, I mean, when they're pregnant, mm-hmm. you ever notice that you had that black line going down your stomach when you're pregnant?
Yeah.
That's connected to the child. It's called the lana negra. And that's to be able to transmit into that fetus the energy from outside inside.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Wow.
That's what happens when a woman becomes pregnant, that black line appears in order to connect to that fetus from the outside. It's like an antenna.
And it only stays while you're pregnant, and when you go, and when
that's
the baby,
it goes away.
Yeah, goes away. Yeah.
That's the genius of our Creator.
Yes, yes, that is. Yeah. Man, I always wondered what that was from.
Yeah, that's connections. It's an outside antenna because. You, when you take your clothes off, really short, it's taking in the light from outside, transmitting it inside.
Wow.
I just had a thought, wondering if that has something to do with what develops the milk and the breast and all of that, because when that's gone through, all of that.
That's in the uterus. And see, once the egg forms, It attaches to the uterus, and then that's where it begins to grow. That's where the placenta develops. And then the uterus, this is why, you know, when women back in the day would nurse their children, the uterus nursing helps to draw back the uterus back into shape, but it also feeds the child its inoculation.
Yes.
It's potent. That's why, you know, the placenta, after once it stops the, you know, pulsating, then they tie the cord around the baby's umbilical cord, and they take that placenta, and they take that. It has so much high protein that they store it. I remember working in the hospital. Store the placentas, and they make makeup. Look at most makeup, most shampoo, is used the what develops the child. Women use it for hair shampoo. Some people put it in, and they put it in food. And so the old way was is that when you had the child, you take the placenta and you bury it, and you put a tree or you plant a plant on it to feed that child to make grow with that child.
Mm. That's why it's very, That's why it's very interesting that in hospitals, you know, Sister Kim, they charge the mother base level $6,000 to take her own placenta and have it stored because they are using the placenta for stem cell research and curing leukemia and other ailments because it's so potent. Well, they charge you $6,000 base level, $6,000 if you wanted to keep your own placenta. And you actually have to go hard on the hospital for them to not take it because what they've gotten people into thinking is to not think about their parts of their body and to, like, just let them take all these things. That then it's like they're doing, honestly, it's like they're Henrietta Lacksing us.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like.
That's what they're doing. Base level storage for like maybe like 5-6 years of your own placenta. Like you have to make an agreement with another company to store your own body parts at a base level of $6,000.
But what I was sharing.
I'm gonna bring another caller in. Excuse me, Brother Carmen. Let me be right back with you. Yeah, I am. But this person had their hand up for a long time. So we're going to bring them in. But Brother Kwame, I'm going to let you finish and then let them speak. Okay, so they'll go after you. Okay, area code 810.
Yes, I'm here now. I'll wait for Kwame's son to finish. Thank you for allowing me. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, hold on. Okay, Brother Kwame, go ahead, please.
Yeah, but most delivery rooms have a contract with makeup companies and all of that, and they store it, and then they come by maybe one, it's according on how many babies they deliver. They store it, and then they will come and with a refrigerated truck and pick up all of those placentas that would, the hospital gets, you know, monies from the makeup companies to buy those placentas in order for them to do that. And the same thing they did with abortions, and this is what the sister was talking about too, the fetuses, the stem cells, the cells of an unborn fetus is highly sought because of what they can do with the stem cells from that
highly
fetus.
Yes, sir.
Lord have mercy.
That's a double one.
Good evening, Brother Eric.
Hey, good evening, y'all. Good evening. Caught me off guard.
Thank you for having your answer call.
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. You know, I'm amazed at the mycelium connection. You know, you never know why you're born in a certain place, why certain things cross your path, why you go down certain routes. And, man, sometimes if you pay attention, man, it's a beautiful mastery of the Most High of putting things together for you, you know, to figure the things out in the end, to see the fruit of the whole thing, you know? So, yeah, I think it's just remarkable that I was able to link with Miss Kim through Antoinette. So my auntie who called in, she has a relative, and one of his daughters' name is Antoinette, my cousin. And, and so it's just crazy. Yeah, so when I was talking to you and you told me that you wanted me to meet somebody, you called Miss Kim, and then, you know, she told me her story, how her and her husband left and went to Los Angeles and they used to go to Pink's Hot Dog Stand. I was just flabbergasted, you know, at the crazy connection. But I love the conversation y'all having about Henrietta Lacks. I've been bringing her name up a lot with this cat information, cats and rocks. We've been talking about quartz crystals and cats and the connection. And, you know, Henrietta Lacks, she's born on August the 1st. She's a Leo. And, of course, you know, they still using her cells even today in today's technology. And so it's just anyway, that was brought up. And but anyway, they made a movie called Ant, Wasp, and the Quantum. And that movie was based on Henrietta Lacks. It's, of course, it's encoded, but they say her, you know, they saying Henry and all that. It's all in there. Y'all go check it out. And if you look at the Super Bowl, the stadium name of the Super Bowl, they have her in there as the Giant. It's Allegiant, but backwards is you see the word Ella, which is my grandma's name, Ella, and in Hebrew, Ella means lion. So they have the cat in the name of the stadium, and also the Giant, they have the ant. If you look at the ant, you'll see that represents Henrietta Lack, and she is a giant in society, which, you know, everybody knows now. But anyway, that might not make sense to y'all right now. But keep making her, keep remembering her name, and it'll come up. This is Miss Kim's night. I don't want to waste time with it. Go ahead, Miss Kim.
No. Well, the only way I know what I know is I had to hear it.
All right.
Okay. But those that don't know, tell us something right quick about Henrietta Lacks.
All right, Henrietta Lacks. This is a young woman. She was very young, and she had a problem with her cervix, you know, down in her private parts. She had excess bleeding. So she went in, and they took a sample. Now, the doctors never, ever seen this before. They take cells out of a person's body. The cell dies immediately. There's no information outside of the body. Her cells not only was living, but multiplying. They was replicating at a rapid speed. And then they even took her cells, of course, because her family wasn't notified that they were doing this. So they did millions of experiments with her cells. One of them was they took her cells in outer space. And when they took her cells in outer space and they let her cells out into the atmosphere, guess what happened? Replication and multiplication. So, of course, they like, man, what? And this is like something out of a Marvel movie, you know, a superhero type stuff. But you listen, y'all, how many other people have they done like this? Henrietta can't be just the first.
And
you
this
know?
Was the hospital where Maryland.
Wouldn't
know how to
do it.
I'm sorry.
I said it can't be the first because they wouldn't have known how to do it.
Already.
they practice on black women. The gynecologists and everything, they use black women as, you know, as their models of practice on.
Yeah, that was Dr. Marion Sims. He was they call him the father of OBGYN. And Marion Sims used slave women in order to see how the woman's reproduction organs worked, and without anesthesia, without sanitation, and he kept experiment until he found out, you know, the whole reproductive system of women using a black slave woman.
And so y'all know that the brawl that happened this year on the river, where the people wouldn't move their boat, you know, y'all remember that. Well, that boat, y'all check that boat out. That boat name was Henrietta. Oh, man. I want to go back to Miss Kim. Miss Kim, I have the great privilege of, like, once again, I want to thank Antoinette. She linked us up. And we had a conversation one night. I don't know how many hours we were on the phone, but you bought out a cassette tape. Usually, you know, people be like 4 a.m. I'm ready to go to bed. I was wide awake. And you said, Brother Eric, you want to hear this cassette tape that I got? I said, yeah, Miss Kim, I love cassette tapes. Well, what's on it? She said, my first ever interview at Motown, she interviewed the first Motown artist that ever signed with Motown. She interviewed him, and the interview was nothing but Stevie Wonder.
Marv Johnson. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, y'all. I want you to speak on. Please speak on that night. And you played all Stevie Wonder songs. We stayed up and listened to it. But then you told me the story about the story about "Rock Me in Your Arms." Could you please tell those people about that testimony about how that song came about? "Rock Me in Your Arms and Hold Me Tonight," please. And I'll yield. And thank y'all very much. This is a beautiful thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Blessings. Yeah. That was the first Just Loving You show, and I interviewed Marv Johnson, and I'm sure I know
the young lady that's on there, baby. Do you know who Marv Johnson is? Brother Kwame, the young lady that you invited.
No, I know him. But I song, I can't remember what song he sang.
Okay. You know who Marv Johnson is, Internet?
No, I don't.
Brother Eddie.
Yes, ma'am.
But I did hear his name today on the on something. It was something that he did that it was on the news or something today.
Marv Johnson. You know who Marv Johnson is, Brother Eddie?
I've heard of him, but I like Brother Carmi, I can't remember the song that he was known for.
I just pulled up his discography, Miss Kim, so I'm looking at some of his stuff now. But I had never heard of him. It looks like he's from Detroit, Michigan, born October 15th, 1938. R&B soul. Yes, ma'am.
Did you say anything about his music?
Yes, ma'am. I can read a little bit. It says, best remembered for a handful of hits, including top 10 smashes, You Got What It Takes, and I Love the Way You Love. Marv Johnson was also a seminal figure in the early history of Motown Records. Marvin Earl Johnson was born in Detroit, Michigan in 1938. And was raised in a musical environment that mixed the gospel music of the Baptist Church with the jump jazz of Louis Jordan and hit Symphony 5. By the time he was in high school, he had joined a local singing group playing carnivals and fairs. In 1958, he cuts his first sides, My Baby-O, and Once Upon a Time. The single failed to sell, but the recording session resulted in a meeting with songwriter and would-be record producer Barry Gordy. After Johnson played his original song, Come to Me, for Gordy and his future wife, Renoma, the couple chose Johnson as the first artist for their fledgling record label, Tamla, because the new label didn't have distribution outside of Detroit. Come to Me, credited to Gordy and Johnson, was released nationally by the United Artists and rose to number 6 on the R&B charts and number 30 on the pop charts. Gordy soon lost direct control of his first discovery after United Artists signed Johnson directly, but continued as the singer's manager. Johnson also toured with Motown acts such as The Miracles, in addition to appearing on Alan Freed's Rock and Roll Revues and media venues such as American Bandstand, and joined early package tours and stage reviews where he shared bills with his idols Sam Cooke and Jackie Wilson. Johnson's second single fared poorly, but his third, 1959, You Got What It Takes, exploded into the charts, becoming a top 10 hit and earned a gold record. In 1960, follow-up, I Love the Way You Love, also landed in the top 10. Among his subsequent singles, You Got to Move Two Mountains was a more pop-flavored effort that reached the top 20, while Happy Days got to number 7 on the R&B charts late in 1960. Merry-Go-Round, issued in early 1961, was Johnson's last chart success. In 1965, with the British invasion in full swing, Johnson's contract was dropped by United Artists. He finally came home to Motown, joining the Gordy label, but never enjoyed another American hit. Although he earned a British gold record with I'll Pick a Rose for My Rose for Tamla in 1968, he later worked in the front office job for Motown and also wrote songs for Tyrone Davis and Johnny Taylor. Johnson's recording career ended in the late 60s, but he never stopped performing and remained active on stage until the early 90s. 1990s. Johnson died from a stroke at a concert in Columbia, South Carolina, on May 16th, 1993. This was written by Bruce Eder. Bruce, E-D-E-R. That would be it.
Thank you, Donna. I see I learned something that I didn't know. But he was the very first Motown recording artist. And I did an interview with him. I won't even go there. I did an interview with him. Mm. That's what Brother Eric is talking about. I recorded that. Mm.
Wow. Miss Kim, well, I was going to play a song by Gil Scott-Heron. We Almost Lost Detroit. Do you mind?
No.
Do you mind?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Here we go, y'all. This is Gil Scott-Heron. We Almost Lost Detroit.
Another time. It inspires the baby's question, what's that? For their mothers as they rhyme. But no one stopped to think about the babies or how they would survive. We've almost lost Detroit this time. How would we ever get over losing our minds? Just 30 miles Detroit, stands a giant power station. It ticks each night as the city sleeps, seconds from annihilation. But no one stopped to think about the people, how they would survive. And we've almost lost Detroit this time. How would we ever get over losing our mind? Monroe County had a sure enough disasters on his mind. And what would Karen Silkwood say to you if she was still alive? That when it comes to people's safety, that time.
Singing about We Almost Lost Detroit. Now, do
you
think...
I knew you were going to ask me that. But I was writing down what I want to share before we leave here, so I really was not listening to the words. I don't know what he's saying. I really do. I never really listened to the words. Can you tell me? Or somebody tell me what it was?
He said, "We almost lost Detroit this time. What about the babies?" I'll send you the song, Miss Kim.
Well, I'm familiar with the song. I just wanted to know. Can somebody tell me what he's really saying?
Well, Brother Eric, Brother Eddie, Brother Kwame.
I'm still waiting for Rock Me in Your Arms. I don't know what the brother was talking about on that one, but that was a good selection. I like Gil Heron's poetry. It's man, bar none.
He's the one who did the King Alfred plan. That was Gil Scott Heron. But he spoke a lot about things that were wrong with us and how we needed to fix us, or just things that was going on in the government and everything else.
And we almost lost Detroit.
Yeah, but remember when the car industry left and when Motown left? Didn't that put a real hard burden on Detroit then?
I see where you're coming from.
I mean, that's the way I'm taking it now. I could be wrong, but.
I heard Brother Kwame finna say something, I think.
Brother Kwame?
No.
Brother Kwame, if you have yourself on mute.
Yeah,
Brother
I did.
Ed?
And I think, you know, there's a lot of things. The part about, you know, what Detroit was saying when all the industry started leaving Detroit, but it also, we almost destroyed during the riots and that whole thing that went there with Detroit. In 60, yeah, so it's because that was, I think, around the time that he was singing about the riots.
Mhm. Wow.
Somebody else is going to say something, weren't they?
I'm glad I'm aware of. Brother Eddie, do you have anything?
No, I actually stepped away from the class for a second to go fix me something in the kitchen. And when I came back, the question was being posed. So I really can't contribute because I didn't hear the lyrics, which now I feel bad. I feel bad because I can't add or enhance what the class is about dealing with that part. So, but anyway, this is so true. This is so. That's why I love and I do depend on you, family, for a lot of the information that we discuss over these shows, these classes, because again, I can't hear, I can't see, I can't read everything. It's only so much that I can do, and everything else comes from you.
What the reactor in Detroit, Ms. Kim? Didn't they dismantle
that again?
I said there's a nuclear reactor in the Detroit area.
Okay.
And what happened was is they had some kind of meltdown, and they had to shut it down. And if they hadn't shut it down, it would have blew up and destroyed Detroit. We almost lost Detroit.
Mm.
That was in, let me see. It was in Reader's Digest in 1975, and it says, "We almost lost Detroit" by John G. Fuller. And he was talking about the story of the reactor that malfunctioned in Detroit. And if the reactor had blew up, it blew up all of Detroit. It was about a nuclear reactor.
Yeah, that they didn't want them to build in the first place.
Right. That's what it was. They almost lost Detroit because it messed up when they whatever they did, and they had to
shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I did the same thing with the incinerator too.
Wow.
So they use certain cities for certain tests, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been making some notes.
But that's what he was singing about. They almost lost Detroit.
Wow.
I'm going back to some of the things I was trying to remember. You mentioned the schools compared to now and during the time when I was going to school. I went to Brownson Elementary School. That's the first school I went to. And my principal was Mrs. Brewer, and my kindergarten teacher was Mrs. Poole. And Mrs. Brewer, if I'm not mistaken, I heard it anyway, that she was the first black principal in the city of Detroit. I learned Lift Every Voice in the church and in kindergarten.
Wow. Can I share something, Miss Antoinette?
Yes.
Okay, and you asked Miss Kim about the school, and they like she said, Detroit was the north, and they didn't have a school. I have my mother's high school diploma, and she graduated in 1950, and on her diploma it says Aberdeen Colored High School, because all the schools still considered in the 50s colored.
Yes.
Yes, it was. She was the first principal of the first color elementary school.
Public schools. They called them colored schools because we had our own schools, and this is what the segregation was about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But do you understand I'm saying the first black principal?
Yeah, wow.
Well, but I can share that too, because my aunt and both of my grandmother's sisters and my great grandmother were all school teachers. And when they changed over to colored schools, they went and still worked in the school system. Auntie, her name was Maddie C. Cousin. Maddie C. Cousin and Uncle Enora was her husband. And they were the principals of the colored school. When they went to the public school, they had to become teachers.
That all things, you know, and this is going away, but not totally. Of course, we were talking about the church, and then you all talked about the tent. My father started organization in tents. He went around the United States putting up tents. And after he got it started, he set up where the people got buildings. The name of the church is the AOH Church of God Incorporated, which is the apostolic, not apostolic, the apostolic overcoming Holy Church of God, teaching the doctrine. And when he died, there were over 400 churches in the AOH Church that started with tents. I finally got my feet. What'd you say, Don?
I was letting you know that we had another caller with their hand up.
Okay.
I'm going to bring them in, okay? 317.
Yes, great evening. Great evening, Miss Kim. Goddess Divine and Brother Kwame and family. It's great to be here. Two questions. The goddess, I'm still listening, but can we get the number again? Because I think she ended up getting dropped off because of the other call. Number one.
Can you give us your name?
Robert, Brother Robert.
Hello, Robert. Okay. Hello,
Brother Robert. Listen. What
yes,
number
ma'am.
Was it you wanted?
For the after party room.
I think
well,
you're in
Brother
it.
Brother Robert, right quick, Brother Robert, it's actually too late if she got dropped. She can't get back in now after 10. This is why we get the
unless
number
he bring
out.
On his line.
Right. That's one way to get her in. Other than that, she can't call in now. The show won't
she
let you
just
in.
Listen from my phone.
Overtime.
All right. Awesome. All right. I think I accidentally ended up getting on the party line. So actually touched on something that was really, really the apostolic or the different denominations. How did you all navigate your interfaith systems? You know, I'm like I spoke of last night. I'm a fan of Detroit, and there's been, of course, great music that came from Detroit, but as well, like even up until you know, Commission, the Winans, all of these other families, the lineage, and things like that of great gospel music that has come out of Detroit. Navigating that with your spiritual beliefs, even for me being a preacher's kid growing up, that honestly stopped me from even looking into some of the esoteric studies of spirituality up until I got of age and just made my own choices and things like
there
that. How did you all navigate that? I've even heard, you know, just different things because, I mean, we've even seen it, you know, certain Aretha Franklin is infamous stories about how she had different, you know, to walk that spiritual line versus being in the limelight, being in the industry and things like that. So I was wondering if you were open to speak on that. And thank you for your time.
Well, bless you. And that's a very good question because the one time that I was faced with that was with Marvin Gaye's father, who would put Marvin down for singing secular music. And when he asked me, how could I turn my back on God? How could I turn my back on God? I ain't got nothing else. That's the only thing that I really know about. You're talking about knowing. I know the God in my life. And I know what I've been through. I know what has happened. And I know how he works with me.
Yeah.
It's a blessing for me to be here because I'm getting things that I needed that I didn't have but didn't know where to get it. The things that are discussed on this program, like even talking about this. I told Mr. Gay, before I do anything, I speak to Melissa, because I just wrote down, acknowledge him in all things. Because if we acknowledge him, see, that's the problem. We're trying to do it ourselves. We can't do it because it's a supernatural situation. The whole thing is supernatural. When you say spirit, supernatural. But we're just natural. But when we put him in it, it becomes supernatural. Enemy is supernatural. And we're not dealing with that. So we wrestle not against flesh and blood. It's a spiritual warfare. A whole situation is a spiritual warfare. We're spirit in a body. But with spirit, everything is going to die. That spirit is not going to die. So it depends on which way we go with that spirit. This is what was taught. That has never left me. Can't leave me because I have seen no other. Nothing else is more true than me.
Yes, we have another call. I'm going to bring them in. Thank you for your question. Okay, area code 740.
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
How you doing, Sister Antoinette? How you doing, Miss Watson?
Bless
you. Hello.
Elder Kwame.
You want to tell everyone who you are? For those that don't know.
Yeah, this is Brother Jeff. Pleased to meet everyone.
Hello, bless you, Brother Jeff. Look, I've been looking for you, too.
I just want to thank you for bringing such beautiful music to my life and to my family's life as a child. My aunties and my mother, they all used to sing in the cabarets around Cleveland, Ohio, and being witness to the practicing, the building up to them putting out music. So it reminds me of my childhood when you know, we were loved and, you know, things of that nature in the neighborhoods back then, I could say in the 70s anyways.
Well, it was a neighborhood, huh?
Yeah, kids, we were still in the streets playing at that time, and, you know, it wasn't until 78, 79 when crack hit the streets. That's when really all heck broke loose, but the buildup to it was not so good walking around the neighborhood. So, you know, just the aftermath of what happened in the 60s there in Detroit, it permeated all the way through the entire Rust Belt. So, but having that good music to reflect on, and man, that's the thing. You know, to me, angels know how to open up hearts. That tone that resonates down to the bone and hits the spirit, that's what keeps families together. And to me, you know, that's what we would do, especially on the weekends during chore time or, you know, spring cleaning and stuff like that, play the music and dance around with the brooms and the Windex and the whatever. So, again, Ms. Watson, just I had to go back and listen to a lot of your music, stemming from a different show. But, again, I just fell in love with that angelic, that talent that you was given to by God, you know. So thanks for putting that out there for me. And again, thank you, Sister Antoinette. I love you very much for bringing all these things into my life. And, you know, it gave me inspiration. So y'all keep doing what y'all
do. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Jeff, God bless you. Bless you. Bless you. And to God be, that's why I say to God be the glory. You know,
yes,
when I think of Motown, I immediately go to God, because no man could think of that. That he didn't even want to have a record thing. He didn't want to do no record company. He was writing. He had been a boxer. I'm talking about Mr. Gordon. That's why I say to God be the glory. And what that did was God opened up. I never knew what he had put here. So to God be the glory for all of it. And I thank you, brother. I was going to say something else. Oh, this is not what I was going to say. I didn't write it down. So I'll get it in a minute. But I did write down Spotify. Spotify they got a Kim Weston thing in there. And they got a thing that says, "This is Kim." I played that and I heard songs that I had not heard since I recorded them. Songs I vaguely remember recording. I haven't been paid for any of that music. But God working it out. Because I couldn't ask for nothing but didn't know it was there. When you all get a chance, please go to Spotify. There's a whole lot of them I don't like, y'all, I'm telling you now. But there's a whole lot of them that I did like. I mean, I heard songs with me and Marvin I hadn't heard since we recorded it.
Wow.
So I'm saying it wasn't us. It was designed. I don't know if anybody has ever heard of, they say at one time Detroit had more churches than any city in the world.
I've heard that before, but I think I heard it from you, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I think you told me that.
Has anybody else heard of that? Well, it wouldn't be that important to you all.
No one put their hands up, so.
I've never heard of it. I want to say greetings to everyone who's on the line. I was being rude and not speaking to everyone, acknowledging everyone. I just wanted to acknowledge that now. This is a historic moment. I'm glad to be a part of it. Yeah, I'm still over here tripping. I can't believe it sometimes. Especially that time, Antoinette, Miss Kim was backstage at a concert, or she was coming out on a concert, or she had us on the line. She bought the cell phone right on the stage and said, "I got my Drive On family with me right here while I'm performing on the concert. Yeah. They on the phone with me." Oh, man. That's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Miss
Kim
busted them. She busted them, but I'm busting at her.
What did you say, Antoinette? Yeah, I wanted to let my daddy know greetings and Brother Eric, too. And I'll mute.
You're right.
Yeah,
Ms. Kim. It says that Detroit at one time had more churches per square mile than any other city in the country, serving the population from many nationalities and many faiths.
Yeah. As I said, I remember Ms. Kim telling me that. I'm going to play this song for us, Miss Kim. I'm going to play this before, because once we go into the overtime, I'm not going to be able to play any music. So I have to play this one for y'all.
Okay, before you go in, can you the brother just ask it for the member? And I thought we were already in it.
Let our rejoicing roar. that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of a new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Stony the road
difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Okay. I want to remind y'all again, Miss Kim's Cash App, you know, please show her some love. And it's $ Songbird Legend. Am I right, Miss Kim?
Yes, ma'am. One. $ Songbird Legend One.
Okay. So please show Miss Kim some love.
You need to give that number out. Antoinette, you need to give the number out. I thought we were already in overtime. That's what the brother was
saying. We are. We are. We're already in it. It's too late for anybody to call in now.
Okay, well, I want to remind everybody, March the 28th. March the 28th. Tuskegee Airmen Commemorative Day. And that's only in 5 states. So every state that's on dry bones, I'd appreciate it. You can get your state to adopt it. And I wish we could come up with a format that we could show, do with everybody and help them with the process to eliminate the problems. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Yes, you are.
Praying for a million people in the Veteran and Community Coalition. All over the country, but not just the country. A million in the country, which gives us a voice. Would they have to listen to a million people with the same thought?
Yeah, Miss Kim, you're talking very softly. It's hard to hear you.
Oh, I'm.
For me, it is.
I got a little excited there. I say, would they have to listen to a million people on one accord?
Yes, they would. They would have to.
Miss Kim.
Yes, sir.
Okay. It says that the bill passed with 118 votes in yes to move on the Senate. The House Bill 124 would additionally designate the fourth Thursday of the Airmen's Day. The holiday would be a day of observation and recognizing the courage and sacrifice of the Tuskegee Airmen. And this was submitted by Republican Becky Curry, was one of the co-authors of the bill for 24. I don't know if she's a senator or that from Detroit. But
she's from Detroit? Huh?
Pardon?
You say she's from Detroit?
I don't know if she's from Detroit. They just say that this is who was part of the people who submitted. The Currys created the Zeb Hughes law, remained on the calendar and has not been called to vote. But
excuse me, Brother Kwame. I'm so sorry. Seems like I'm always interrupting you. Please forgive me. But y'all don't forget. On Sunday, Dry Bones at 10:30 a.m. for the Helios Thelios, and Friday, the 3 o'clock p.m. on Sunday, Eastern Time, no matter where you are in the world, at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, we're drumming to Lift Every Voice and this Brother Ray. And tomorrow night, I did have scheduled for a doctor, but we're going to have to reschedule that because of some legal things that are going on, and I'll leave it at that. But we're going to have to reschedule that interview for him. So I just wanted to put that out there. Forgive me, Brother Kwame, for always interrupting you. Please continue.
No, it's okay because you got to get it out there, cut off. But this is a bill in Mississippi. Because what they were passing was to designate, they wanted Mississippi Musicians Month, and the day of the Tuskegee Airmen was going to be part of this celebration for the state of Mississippi. So like you're saying, there's different states that have, you know, implemented these bills to get the date on March 24th is what they talk about. That relates to it.
March 28th.
What they're saying is okay, what happened to Tuskegee Airmen? The 336th Fighter Group was awarded the Presidential Unit Citation for its longest bombing escort mission to Berlin on March 24th, 1945. During the mission, the Tuskegee Airmen didn't destroy three German Me-260 jet fighters and damage additional other fighters. So they were awarded presidential citation on March 24th, 1945. So that goes with what you're doing on March 28th. You know, but it's March 20 presidential citation.
Okay, but it's what they said was the fourth Thursday of every March. So, last year was the 23rd. Yeah, last year was the 23rd. This year is the 28th. So it's the Thursday.
Okay, but I'm just saying this is what, you know, I'm looking up what happened for on March 24, 45 related to the Tuskegee Airmen. That's one of the things that was a big thing when they received that presidential citation for what they did with escorting the bombers over Berlin, Germany.
And that was in 45.
Right.
Well, Brother Kwame, I know the family knows because I see it all the time. One of the things that disturbed me the most was when they came home after all they had been through, the humiliation, and that's one of the reasons they didn't want to talk to about it to the family to tell them what they had been through, because they had to relive all of that, you know? What they went through was it wasn't cool. Forget I even said that.
And here's another fact about the Tuskegee Airmen. They flew over 15,000 sorties between 1940. These sorties were a mission between May of 1943 to June 1945. Bomber crews often requested by the Red Tails, the nickname acquired from the painted tails of the Tuskegee pilots, which were the distinction of the Red Tails. 66 Tuskegee Airmen died in combat.
Do you see where they tell about how many bombers were being shot down every day? Because of the
This is saying what was famous about the Tuskegee Airmen. I'll send it to you, Ms. Kemp.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, I'm talking about the Tuskegee. Until the Tuskegee Airmen started escorting the bombers, they were losing thousands of people a day because nobody took it as serious as they did. But General Davis told them if they left the escort, don't come back to the station.
Right, and that's why they had 66 pilots got killed. 66 of the Tuskegee Airmen were killed during their sorties, the 15,000 sorties that they did for the bombers to do their mission. And they were also requested. So, yeah, you know.
And when you stand they were requested, I want the people to understand that the bombers were requesting the Red Tails to escort them because nobody had ever done that like they did it. So they not only escorted them to the thing, they escorted them back, which they didn't have to do. And then most of those people didn't even know they were black.
Right, because they talk about the commander over the Tuskegee Airmen were white, and the people that trained them in the airfields before they went over, white trainers who taught them how to fly.
You're talking about at Tuskegee?
Yeah, in Tuskegee, Alabama.
You know, it's amazing. I see the greatness of what America. I don't see it all, but what I see, I try to look at the good side, the positive side, because the people that train them like they train everybody else, and they speak on that. They gave them good training. They gave them the best training. And they couldn't take that away from them. They could not take the training that they had got from predominantly
right. And
white.
The other part.
White people. I'm saying,
right.
White people training. You understand what I'm saying? And then you look on the other side. White people were the ones that oppressed them. I don't know where he's going, but it's all right. I want to defer for just a moment to something that has been in the back of my mind, but today it just came forward and I couldn't deny it. When you look at the situation where there's a problem with people, when you look at it, you analyze it. It's what? It's the same people doing the same thing. All the problems come from the same people. But they want to say, they want to say that we're the problem. We ain't answer nobody.
That is so
Did
true.
You know, Ms. Kim, that there were over 10,000 black men and women that served to support the Tuskegee Airmen, including navigators, bombardiers, mechanics, instructors,
right.
Crew chiefs, nurses, and cooks.
Right, they're all called Tuskegee Airmen.
Right, it was 10,000.
And they definitely gave credit to them, because if they had not taken care of the planes and things and had their stuff together, whatever they needed, if those people hadn't did that, they wouldn't have been successful either. But I didn't finish my point that I was saying. When they came home after going through all they went through, Freeman Field and all of that,
mm-hmm.
when they came off the boat, ship, or whatever it was, they were told to go to the left. Whites were told to go to the right. They had the parade and the confetti and the whole bunch over there. But wasn't nobody on the left. Nobody was on the left. So after being persecuted and going through all they went through, then they came home, and here's the situation they can't even talk about.
Yeah, which was really sad. No, that was terrible.
So I'm saying it's time for us to step up.
Yes.
And in the process of putting out good got something.
Yeah.
None of them wanted to talk. For those that have not heard of Southern Victory, please look it up. And that was done by George Lucas. And the Tuskegee Airmen walked out because they were disappointed at what he came up with compared to what they gave him.
Mm.
And this is the best that I've understood. And the best is what? Evidently about a 4 out of 10. So what is it that we don't have?
Or unity.
No, I'm talking about what is it we don't have that they gave George Lucas, that they were disappointed that he didn't put in there. What is it that they wanted in there? Tell you what?
Tell us, please.
I don't know. I'm asking. We need to find out. What is it that he didn't put in the documentary that they were so disappointed they walked out? We don't know what that is. And this is the best that I seem to understand.
Yeah, that we don't know. That would be a question that would probably be good to ask Ms. Brown. Since she, she works in there, so with Tuskegee Airmen, so she would probably know. Question we'll have to ask her.
But you see, that's one of the things, by them not talking, by them not wanting to talk about it.
Yeah.
We need to know that. Could I get you all? I haven't found it. I haven't been able to get it on my phone. White Warwick is talking about Mayor Young, who was a Tuskegee Airman, and his relationship. Told by Ms. Brown that the Tuskegee Airman organization was so upset that they wanted nobody to know that he was a Tuskegee Airman. Could I get you all to look at that, please? White Warwick on Netflix.
Yeah, I've seen that. I didn't know that he was a Tuskegee Airman.
Mayor Young is the one that put together the situation for Freeman Field. He's the one that put that together. And what I'm feeling is that's them repaying him for doing that. That's the place where they had the barbed wire over them and the Germans walking around loose.
Oh, wow.
What was his name, Ms. Kim, that you're asking about? Was a Tuskegee Airman?
Mayor Young. Coleman Young.
All right.
Yeah, but
I just sent you a copy of the roster of the Tusk Airmen in alphabetical order.
Oh man, could you send that to me as well, please?
But Brother Kwame, since you in research, would you find out if something particular happened on July 18th, 1944?
With the airman, Dickie Airman,
yeah.
Miss Kim?
Uh-huh. Mayor Young proclaimed July 18th as Kim Weston Day in Detroit.
Oh, okay.
And the song, my writing, the song Detroit had something to do with that, too.
Oh.
Did you know that there was, her name was Sergeant Amelia Jones? Worked for 2 years in World War II on the squadron under Colonel Benjamin Davis, commander of the Tuskegee Airmen. She was honored for service in 2014. She was the only Tuskegee Airwoman.
Okay. The only Tuskegee.
Okay. Is that Dr. Nancy? That's not Dr. Nancy. Because I know Dr. Nancy is 104. And She was a Tuskegee Airman. Well,
yeah, she was an airman.
She was a nurse or something. Yeah, she was a nurse.
No, but
she was a pilot. She was a pilot.
A pilot. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. She's in New York. She's 104. And she's ill. She's ill right now.
Okay, I was trying to ask Brother Kwame what he was saying. Was she a pilot?
Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Kim.
Right. She was a pilot.
And you say she's the only female pilot.
Right. She was a female pilot. It doesn't say she flew in the war, but they just saying she was a female pilot. Under this Benjamin, this colonel.
Benjamin Davis. But you know
right.
what? They say that they're the people that would, the women would fly the planes. Now that I think about it, they would fly the planes with the supplies and things for them. So they had more than one pilot.
Mm-hmm.
The women would fly the planes, equipment and stuff like that for that, but I didn't hear anything about them flying and fighting. They weren't fighter pilots. That's the word I've been trying to think of. Fighter pilots.